Welcome. My name is Law Sarmiento. My first name is Law. My last name is Sarmiento. I often get called Law Sarmiento as if that was my whole name, like the Buddha, the Pope, Law Sarmiento. It's just Law. So I'm happy to be with all of you. There's a lot of dear friends here tonight, as well as new friends. And I've been a part of the IMCW community for the last 19 years. I started coming when I was about 5. And I've been teaching probably for the last 7 or 8 years. Mostly, I lead the people of color and LGBTIQ sanghas for IMCW. I also teach teen retreats with Inward Bound Mindfulness Education and young adult retreats with Spirit Rock. So it's good to be in a mixed bunch. It's great to see straight, white, cisgender, middle-aged men that I rarely get to teach to. So happy that you're all here. And for if there are any Jewish friends here, Shana Tova, Happy New Year. I haven't been to this Sangha in a while, and just want to acknowledge like a sadness that I feel that my dear friend Jinky isn't sitting right here. I don't know how many of you knew Jinky, but she would always sit in the front row, and I used to go to classes here with her often, and she would always have this like welcoming smile and huge hug for me. We didn't know each other, you know, personally, but just that feeling of Sangha, it's very special. She passed away in July. So the title of this talk is The Dukkha of Comparing Mind and the Liberation of Enoughness. And the interesting thing about the Dharma is that we're always talking about the present moment. But actually, in the Dharma world, we're always planning months ahead. And so I was slotted to do this particular session months ago. And I always think it's interesting because I never know how I'm going to feel, you know, 6 or 7 months later. So just to say that I've been struggling with a bit of depression over the last month. And my heart has been incredibly tender. I've been going through a lot of processing of grief. My mother died about 1.5 years ago, and my dear friend Sherry Maples passed away this past July as well. Carry this wound, I think I mentioned it here before, but it's always a haunting one of getting a needs improvement and show and tell in kindergarten. And so sitting in front of a lot of people brings up a lot of fear, anxiety, insecurity, doubt. And this is like the third time I've taught this class. First taught it 3 years ago. I don't know if anybody was there when I taught it. But I'm someone who writes Dharma spoof songs. And so the entire Dharma talk was basically sung to you. And so talking about comparing mind, I'm definitely not in the mood to sing with my ukulele today. So just noticing just a lot, you know, for those of you who don't know the word dukkha, dukkha is often referring to suffering or unsatisfactoriness. And it's just a constant in our life, you know, it's kind of the first noble truth. And so even when things are going well, we experience a touch of dukkha because it's going to end. And then even sitting in this seat, right? You know, this is normally where Tara has sat for 20 years. And it's like, who am I, you know, to sit here? And it's not as full as, like, when she's here and, you know, all this, like, chatter, and what does that mean? What it means is that Tara's not here and I'm sitting here. But the stories that, you know, my mind can generate. And what I've found with the Dharma is that a lot of these stories tend to hurt me. And the practice has helped me, like, notice when those stories arise and to ask myself in that space of giving it a little bit of room. Do I actually believe that that's true? So I don't really have anything prepared for this evening. My style of teaching tends to be like getting a sense and a feel of those of you in front of me and being very present with what's arising and alive for me. So it's kind of like going on a big roller coaster and just like riding up that hill and just not knowing what that ride's going to be like. And that's another way that I compare myself to other Dharma teachers. You know, I often say that I'm not ever podcast ready because I just never know really like what even, you know, title I'm going to give the talk. So using this premise of comparing mind, just share with you that like it was never a desire of mine to like be a teacher. And you know, I've been practicing within IMCW for about 10 years, and it was the old school way where Tara just kind of tapped me on the shoulder and said, okay, you're ready to teach. I'm like, what? You know, when I was leading the sanghas for a while, it was more of, you know, here's a tricycle article, let's pass it around, everybody read it, and then I'll ring the bell at the end and we all go home. So to step up and begin to give Dharma talks was a challenge. And so for me, sitting up here is like one of the most uncomfortable, painful things. And there's usually like accompanied by like a week or two of that pain. And this desire, this wish for it to be otherwise, like, oh, I wish... Like, I can't understand, like, how Tara does this every week for 20 years. How can you think of new things to say and inspire people in the incredibly powerful ways that she does? And so I had to go, like, really far back, you know, and to kind of get what this deep conditioning in me was to feel this way about myself. And at a very early age, at the age of 5, I figured out that I was attracted to other little girls and didn't want to be a little girl. And if you can see this picture, I'm here in a, like a little tennis outfit, looking like my with some swagger in there. And it was a big secret that I had to keep for myself for a long time, and it was something that I intuitively knew that it wasn't okay, and this was growing up in the early 70s. And as a child, people kept getting my gender confused. You know, I can remember people always asking me, like, are you a boy or a girl? Are you a boy or a girl? And they would never ask anybody else that, but they would always ask me that. And it just placed this, like, real deep sense of, like, there's something wrong with me. Like, people don't know who I am or can't tell who I am. And then also coming, you know, to this country with my parents as an immigrant when I was like 10 months old and getting pretty clear early on that being immigrants, being people of color, was not really that cool here in America. Probably as Pacific Islander people, we had it a little bit easier than my Black and Latino siblings in particular. You know, but we were like the model minority. Like, we had to strive and excel. And in so many ways, that was my coping strategy, was to like be the best perfect person that I could, grade-wise, sports-wise, whatever. So developing all these ways of being other than I am, you know, like excelling in science because my parents wanted me to be a doctor, and getting like, I hate science, like I wanted to major in English or, you know, something else. I'm just feeling so disconnected right now. Stories are going through my head. You tell this story all the time, La. You're like a one-hit wonder, you know, of the Dharma. You're just like this dharmic unicorn that like just says the same thing over and over again, and who gives.
sure.
Thanks, buddy. You know, there are just so many ways, like in the world, that we have to pretend we're something we're not. You know, and thank you. And it's, you know, I'm just actually just like super tired of like having it all together or pretending like I have it all together and all my ducks in a row and everything is so organized and planned and scheduled and I'm happy all the time. It's quite exhausting. And what's great about the Dharma is, like, I can have a talk like this and not lose my job. Probably never get invited to do this again, but, like, I really don't care. I, you know, I come to these talks thinking, like, I just want to have a taco truck. I don't want to do this. You know, and what if we could just be who we are, you know, and not be judged for it, and not be ridiculed about it or dismissed, disrespected. You know, I'm not someone who... I've learned a lot about myself, let me say this. I've learned a lot about myself over the past couple years. One is that I'm actually a very anxious person, but you would probably could not tell because I hide it really well. But I am super anxious. I also have, like, these bouts of depression that happen a lot. I also have probably ADD. I can't, like, focus very well or pay attention. Like, if I try to read things, I don't retain things. What's really ironic is that, you know, in high school, I played this role so well of being, like, the perfect student that I actually was voted most likely to succeed. And on my good days, I actually feel like I actually have succeeded. So, you know, there's this sense of joy and happiness and connection that I have in my life. It feels really hard to connect with, I mean, I love connecting with people, but as an introvert, it feels really hard to try to connect with like 100 people at one time. And so I just really get like, wow, I just don't do this well. Or I, you know, I do it as a practice, and I do it because I don't like allowing fear to rule my life. And so even if it's challenging and difficult for me, I just keep doing it, you know. It's just like when I got invited to teach teen retreats, and I had absolutely no experience working with teenagers, I'm like, nah, you gotta do it, you know. And if I chose not to do that, I would have missed out on some of the most amazing young people that I've ever met. Some of them are actually here. So I have to stop looking at the clock. Yeah, pull it out of me, man. Just let's have a mic so that everybody can hear. Yeah, actually, we need a mic because we need everybody to be able to hear, and there's some folks with listening devices. So is Glenn around? Is there a mic available? Right there.
Are we allowed to ask personal questions or no?
Sure.
You're pretty open. I know you said you're, but you've gone through a lot. So I remember meeting you at the retreat that I went to. It was my first Buddhist experience. I remember that you said that you had like a lot of things planned, you know, that you wanted to do. I'm just wondering, like, because I was excited for you, so I'm just wondering, did you ever? I know it's a very personal question because you said you had big things planned. So did you end up doing that? And if so, how did it go? And if not, what kept you from doing that?
Thank you. So, what is your name?
Bijan.
Ah, Bijan. Can barely see you with the lights. So what Bijan's referring to is I was the manager of the fall retreat last fall, and it happened right in the middle of the election. And each of the teachers and myself had an opportunity to share our reaction to the results. And basically what I said was that there was a part of me that was angry and frustrated and disappointed for just a little while. And then after that, like, I actually felt really calm. And I felt really calm because, like, for many people of color, queer people of color, like, this shit's been going on forever, you know? And it's only now that, like, more people are being affected by it. And that afternoon, after the election, I was going to see a social worker to get a letter to diagnose me with gender dysphoria so that I could get top surgery. And for those of you who don't know what top surgery is, it's basically the removal of one's breasts. And so I did do it, Bijan, and I actually think I look really good. So. Because I felt, you know, especially at that point, that it was so important to just finally embody myself, regardless of who the president was or what administration was going to come forth, so that I was just being true to myself. And if anyone ridiculed me or wanted to beat me or kill me, then at least in this lifetime, I did what I needed to do for me. So for a while, actually, I had the surgery last December. So for a while after the surgery, I actually felt like super embodied and finally at home within myself that I had never felt before. And I actually felt that it was reflected in the way I was teaching, you know, that I was in myself. But only in the last, like, couple months have I felt like, wow, this isn't actually even helping, you know. And it was just another reminder for me that, like, you know, quite honestly, nothing outside of myself will ever make me happy. You know, and to keep having trust and faith in my own Buddha nature, my own innate goodness, that I actually forgot a lot in this past month, so much so that I actually took a risk and put it out on Facebook that I was really struggling and just wanted to hear some affirming, loving words from friends, and was blown away by getting like 250 comments of like people saying how much I meant to them in their lives. And taking in like that kind of love is very unfamiliar to me, you know. My parents never told me they loved me. The first time they told me they loved me was when I came out to them when I was 38 years old. But the thing about my parents though was they never talked about love. They showed you love, you know. It was more through their actions. And so for me, it was so much more about what people do and how people behave that shows me love, and not necessarily what they say. So receiving all these, you know, comments was like a practice in and of itself of actually believing it. Because in believing it, it was like I knew, like, each of these people that you know, each person that said something. And in my knowing of them and how they've been with me and how I've been with them, that is what I trusted. So, you know, to me, taking refuge in my own Buddha nature, my own innate goodness, taking refuge in the Buddha is often how it's referred to. And then taking refuge in the Sangha, you know, because how often do we forget who we are? And how often, you know, I often think about, like, so many people that may feel alone in this life, who don't have 250 friends that will tell them that they mean so much to them. Going back to comparing mind, you know, Facebook is actually like dukkha central in a lot of ways, you know, like you scroll through and it's like, oh my God, look at that person doing this thing, or look at that person, you know, getting this new house, or look at this person getting this job. And there's, you know, when I'm in a good place, it's like there's a lot of mudita or sympathetic joy around that. But when I'm depressed, it's just like, step away from the Facebook, you know? And especially because I have so many dynamic, awesome, activist friends, right? You know, that are out there in big ways wanting to shift, you know, the trajectory of our fate in this country and in the world. And I've never seen myself as an activist. I see myself as kind of like just an everyday person who just sends love to, you know, each person that I meet as much as possible. And to me, a lot of that just, like, really matters, you know, just really counts. And this dukkha around comparing my efforts in wanting to help the world wake up to what other people are doing, I mean, there's a role for each of us. And I believe that, and I trust that, you know, we're doing what it is that we can to not cause harm and to cultivate more love and compassion in the world. You have another question? Yes, Lauren.
I have to say something about what you just said. So I'm one of those super cool activist friends, and I, like, totally honor and respect the way you do your part. I don't think it's any lesser or any more than any of us who choose our way. Like you, I'm just an ordinary person doing my part, and I especially want to name my part for Tikkun Olam, since tonight is Rosh Hashanah. But I wanted to bring up something about comparing mine, so I've always thought of it as, like, don't compare myself to other people, don't compare my insides to other people's outsides, don't look at what people put up on Facebook because they don't put up their worst stuff, et cetera, et cetera. The next layer is don't compare myself to prior versions of myself. I can't doing flying round house kick anymore, right? Like, I can mourn the person who could do that, but I don't have to feel bad about the fact that I'm not that person. What I realized in the past couple weeks is another level, which is I'm comparing myself to the self that my parents told me I should be. And moving through life as if there's going to be a test. In my family, it was competitive conversation, and you had to know everything or you would be humiliated. So I move around in my car, like, memorizing DC's neighborhoods because I think there's going to be a test. And I've only really realized that that's setting me up against the ideal that my parents had for me, which, and my siblings, which was to know everything. So for me, that's like a deeper level of comparing mine that I'm only just coming to be aware of. If you have any comments,
thank you,
I'd love
Laura.
To hear them.
I think one of the biggest, when my mom was in the process of dying over the course of the year, one of my biggest aspirations was to heal a lot of the pain between us. And we were not a very communicative family. And so to process something with my mom, to talk about, you know, sort of my pain and my hurt and ways that I feel like I experienced her as over-controlling and overprotective of me and how that hindered, you know, my ability to be myself and grow. I just had to let a lot of that go, you know. I just had to really, like, just accept that this is who she was, and she did the best she could. And I, as an adult, you know, can create whatever life I want, you know. She was definitely disappointed that I didn't become a doctor, but I became a, you know, body worker and eventually a Dharma teacher and a retreat manager. And then she took pride in the fact that I was, like, an entrepreneur, you know, like, that I had my own business and did these different things. And so whatever story she had to tell herself to make herself happy and reconcile her lost dream with me was fine. Because quite honestly, you know, my mom came with me to this country with $800 and 2 suitcases to meet my dad. And what they have given me is a life I could never have had if we stayed in the Philippines. And so, you know, a lot of it is just like putting aside, well, not really putting aside, because I did many years of therapy to like be with the pain that I had as a child, but to not hold on to that, you know, to like allow it to recognize it, allow it, you know, it's the whole rain thing, investigate what's there, and then to not identify with it. So thank you, Lauren, you know, in terms of that, being able to separate out, you know, what is true and what is real for us, ultimately. Any other questions? Yes.
So some of the things which you're, I'm originally from India, so some of the things which you were talking about parents, I think it's very Asian, you know, a lot of Asian parents are, they want their kids to be, you know, become doctors or engineers or lawyers. I've been in practicing for about a couple of years, and I started to hang out in Sangha for like, I guess, 4 or 5 weeks. And everybody has a story of why they started. I have my own kind of funny story. You started 10 years ago. So why, you know, how did you find out about meditation, got started? Mm-hmm. And then when you start meditating, after some period of time, because it's like kind of slow process, I mean, it doesn't like you go and you're like, oh, you know, it's like, get it. At some moment, you kind of have that, I mean, I know I had that aha moment. When was that aha moment? Like, oh my God, this is so awesome.
I'm still trying to find it. I got into meditation because of a really bad breakup. And I finally, you know, I figured out that the common denominator in all my relationships was me, and that I needed to actually like stop judging and blaming the people I was involved with and actually like take responsibility for what I was bringing to the relationship. And so a friend of mine brought me to Tara's class in 1998, and I just started, you know, practicing with her ever since. And when did the aha moment come? It came and went and came and went and came and went, you know? There was one sit I remember distinctly where, like, there was absolutely nothing in my mind. And I'm like, oh, my God, is this it? You know, it's like it's totally, like, clear. And I tried to, like, generate thought, and it was like Teflon. Nothing would, like, stick. And actually that state of mind has, like, been pretty present for me. Like, a lot of the times there's nothing going on in here, as evidenced by this talk. My partner often jokes and says, you know, the only things that go through your mind are like bacon fantasies and bad 70s song lyrics, you know. But a lot of times there's nothing there, you know. It's just like I'm just being present with what's happening right in front of me. And, you know, other than getting amped up about like speaking in front of a large group of people, there's not a lot of dukkha there. So I would say the aha, you know, it's like impermanence. The aha moments come and go, you know. Like you can sit long retreat. I sat a long retreat a couple years ago, and I was, you know, 3 weeks in, I was like, man, this is great, you know. This is like awesome and really happy and just like challenge the universe to like bring it, you know. Like I'm ready for like whatever, you know, challenge you have for me. And a few days later, I got a knock on my door, basically giving me news that my mom had a terminal brain tumor. And that was, it was like, oh, I didn't mean bring it that big, you know, it's like, but it definitely, the practice helped me, like, come back to my family and assist my mom in a way that I would not have been able to, because it gave me the space to allow my whole family to be how they were going to be and how my mom was going to be, and then I could bring myself to that in as loving and kind a way as possible, and as well as like be able to, you know, express my anger and fear and anxiety in other places, but not with my family. So Yeah, so the aha moments come and go. You know, it's like a nirvana that just kind of skits away from you. So hence the unsatisfactoriness of life experiences. Yeah. Back there, please.
So I have a confession. I was really happy when I saw you tonight and you'd be talking to us. And then I got really sad when I saw you didn't have a ukulele with you. Because I was here, and I was surprised when you said you had only taught a couple of these sessions, because I was here for your ukulele session. And I don't come that often. So I thought it was like a regular thing when Tara was gone, that you just step up. And after the ukulele presentation, let's just call it that, you kind of knocked it out of the park, because everyone loved it. It was wonderful.
Thank you.
And I was wondering if you could remind me a teaching that you had from one of the songs in that session. And I know we don't have a ukulele, but maybe we can fake it. Because I hear it, and I think about it a lot. And I can't quite remember all of it, so I was hoping you could fill it in. It's how raindrops keep falling on my head.
No.
Really teach the Four Noble Truths. I was wondering if you can just run that through with us real quick.
Oh, man. It's a test.
I don't mean to put you on the spot.
Yeah.
But you're on the spot.
Yeah. I don't remember. I'll sing another Dharma song, but I don't quite remember it. I can give you the link to the talk, and it'll explain it. But quite honestly, I don't remember it. And I mean, this is another thing. Like, I've got these things on my knees. I'm getting old. Like, I've got these things on my knees. I got arthritis in my knees. I don't, like, my brain is not all here. I can't, like, necessarily remember it. So I am just deeply humbled right now. And I just really am feeling the love. I'm feeling the compassion from all of you, even in this large group. Since we're talking about refuge, let me like sing a song that I actually wrote for Tara when she wrote True Refuge. But because she gets really shy when I use her in the song, I'll switch it out and put the Buddha in. It's like interchangeable, really, to me. So, so it goes, a long, long time ago, I can still remember how my thoughts would make me cry. And I knew when I took a glance at the Buddha that I'd have a chance of maybe being happy for a while. 'Cause his compassion makes hearts quiver with every teaching he delivered. With bad news on our doorsteps, how can we take one more step? And when it's time to heed the call and radically accept what's to befall, you ain't gonna find it in some shopping mall. True refuge, no need to stall. So bye-bye, false refuge, bye-bye. No more donuts or heartbreaking, ain't no place left to hide. Got dharmic skills, no need to bump up my pride. Buddha's wisdom is a powerful guide. The Buddha's wisdom is a powerful guide. Well, he taught us how to love, to trust ourselves beyond and above. Can you find your breath again? Does your body feel much more than whole? Has sitting saved your mortal soul? And I can teach you how to walk real slow. 'Cause you know mindfulness is the way to save us from our everyday. So just kick off your shoes before entering the hall, dudes. I was a lonely drop in the ocean wave, but true refuge saved this dukkha'd slave. I found freedom from my pain. We can begin again. And we were singing, bye-bye, false refuge, bye-bye. No more donuts or heartbreaking, ain't no place left to hide. Got dharmic skills, no need to bump up my pride. Buddha's wisdom is a powerful guide. often laugh, you know, like teachers deliver these like beautiful, beautiful Dharma talks and like nobody claps for them. And I sing one like silly Dharma song. It's like, oh yeah, standing ovation. So, yeah, I feel like the Weird Al Yankovic of the Dharma world. So thank you for bringing up the song. Yeah, maybe I should just do that. Maybe should I just do Dharma the Musical and just like sing the Dharma.
Hi, Lau.
Hey.
That's funny. Before you just sang, I didn't know that he would ask you for that. I wanted to ask you a question. When you're down, when you're depressed, and you feel humbled, when you feel like the brain is not working, especially when you're at home and you feel the depression or something coming on. We all go through this stuff, but I want to ask what works for you. And just singing, to me, feels like it works for you. And I wanted to ask right after, not because we clapped, because we cheered, because we liked it, but I want to ask you, how did it make you feel? How do you feel right now after that song?
I feel happy. I feel lighter. I feel like that's what I do, you know? It's kind of like if I were trying to, like, teach you all about, like, oh, the Noble Eightfold Path, and here's a PowerPoint, and da-da, I can't do that, you know? And so, like, making up these songs, you know, like I have my Johnny Cash song where I say, like, oh, here's the entire Dharma in four verses, you know? And it's like, it's true. They're all there, you know? And so, like, it makes me feel happy because it makes me feel like, you know, there's a simplicity, you know, in it. And I feel like I'm just a very simple person just trying to lead a wholesome life and be good to people, you know? And sometimes I think we just make it so complicated, you know? Just like, I just want to hug all of you, you know? Just like, I just want to, like, you know, there's that hugging saint. It's like, I want to be that, you know, like with the taco truck and the ukulele on the side. But, yeah.
See, what I wanted to say about that was, I wanted to ask you, so what works for you when you're at home? I don't know if you sing for yourself, but yeah. It feels like it worked right now, and you maybe have other things that work for you. Yeah. And if you want to share more other things, I'm happy to hear, and hopefully others too. But I can see how it works. Yeah. And yes, maybe you want to be almost a hugging La with the ukulele on the taco truck. I think it would be very original. And I think you need to be original. You need to be what works for you. And if it works for you, to me, it works for me and hopefully for everybody else. Mm. So I don't care if you sit up here and pretend you're Tara or not pretending, but sitting like her. But I could just feel it. I could feel the Dharma just pouring out of you through the song. Mm. And so I say, if you go for it. Yeah. Don't care if we ever talk anymore. I'm not saying you're not good at it or you shouldn't do it, but if the singing connects you right with the source and coming through you, go for it.
Thank you.
So thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because music and song is like really touches my heart. And sometimes, I don't know if anybody else feels this, and it's okay to admit because I'm going to admit it, but it's like sometimes I find the Dharma to be like really dry and cold. And something that actually has warmed my heart a lot or really like penetrated my heart recently is listening to Catholic hymns. You know, and I think it brings me closer to my mom, but at the same time, I feel like, especially like the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi, you know, like, make me a channel of your peace. It's like, whoo, that's like major bodhisattva, you know, song right there. So, you know, music, and that's why I played this song, you know, like part of playing the song for me was like, I just need to like feel my heart because I'm just not feeling it right now. And for me, that, you know, of all the, like, books of sutras and things like that, I just, my largest, biggest aspiration is I just want to be able to feel my heart and feel yours. And feel connected. And feel seen. And feel gotten. You know? And quite honestly, you know, the person that gets freaked out about this whole gig is my little 5-year-old, you know? It's just like, We can't go out there and tell them who you are, because if you do, they're going to, like, you know, call you names or hurt you in some way. And my adult totally knows that's not true. And that's why I let my little five-year-old rule my diet as well. So there's got to be a middle road there. Can I sing you one last song?
Yeah.
Okay. Which one? Okay, so here's the Johnny Cash song. So this is basically the entire Dharma in four verses. I hear those thoughts a-coming, coming round the bend. I ain't felt such suffering since I don't know when. And I'm stuck in my mind's prison, and I just can't get free. But those thoughts keep a-coming, and that's what tortures me. So here we are in Sangha for some refuge and relief from our crazy busy lives and the boss that gives us grief. As we watch our minds a-wander, thoughts go in to and fro. Amazing what can happen when we can finally let go. The practice makes you stronger, at least that's what we say. Build you up some courage to learn how to stay. And I trust that with more practice of love and compassion, that an open heart regardless can actually be fun. So may you all be happy, may you all know peace, be free from suffering, the ultimate release, and may the merit of your practice wake up all beings now. As all things are impermanent, I end with a heartfelt bow. So just sitting and just noticing what I'm feeling right now. It's, a lot of relief. And also just aware, and there's this like twinge of wanting to apologize. But I'm going to go against this tendency to want to apologize for how I showed up tonight. Because how I showed up tonight was the best that I could do. So my wish for all of you is to trust, because what I'm feeling in terms of those around me is like a lot of care, a lot of love. And just imagine if we like lived in a world where we could just be however we are, whether we're in pain or whether we're in joy or whether we're in grief or whether we're angry, and just feel held. There's no greater gift or greater healing than that. So let's just sit.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
I want to thank you for your authenticity. Thank you for your courage to be up here, because the fact that you were so honest and authentic and being up here and just having us receive you just as you are, it was very, very inspiring, especially considering that I'm going through a lot of the things that you were talking about tonight. So thank you for your authenticity.
There's this thing, you know, when we call someone teacher, we give someone a role of authority. I've always felt that that is like, to give ourselves to that is like one of the most disempowering things. So I think part of like my dharma, the way I am to offer it, is to get the message across that, like, you know, I may know some things, but you know what? You also know things, a lot of things. The fact that you can reflect back to me, you know, my own Buddha nature, it's like there is wisdom in Sangha. And, you know, the Thich Nhat Hanh says that the next Buddha will be the Sangha, and that is us. And that is what we actually need to come together around. And what I was going to say this, but, like, in our tradition, we spend too much time in silence. We don't spend enough time in community. And so my wish for all of us is to find, as we go forward in IMCW's next 20 years, is to find ways for us to come together in true community. Because we can talk about wise speech and wise action, but I've been to many meetings in Dharma communities, and it's like, where did this mindfulness all go? And it's not to say that, like, we're not going to make mistakes, and we are. We are going to break each other's hearts a million times, and can we use our practice to make that okay? And that's how we stay together, and that's how we hang out with each other. So I thank you for receiving me however I was tonight, and I'm holding you all in my heart and wishing you well, whatever it is that you are experiencing in your own life, whether it be wonderful and joyous or really difficult and painful. So let's sit for a moment. And just checking in and noticing and being aware of the quality of your body, heart, and mind in this moment. And may, in your most difficult and challenging times, find the courage and strength to reach out for support in whatever way brings your heart closer to yourself again. May the merit of our time together, both in practice and in community, may it be of benefit to ourselves, each other, our friends, families, communities, all beings everywhere. May all beings be happy and peaceful and free from suffering. May all beings be safe and protected from inner and outer harm. May all beings be healthy and strong, awake and free. Stay. Namago. I stole that from Noah Levine. So thank you all for being here, making the time to come out this evening.